Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations. This is a summary of episode 6 on bureaucracy by Max Weber. For more information about the episode and to get links to the text, please visit our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. My name is Dimitris, speaking to you from Birmingham in the United Kingdom. So Max Weber, the author of our text, was a Prussian/German sociologist and philosopher famous for being one of the three founders of sociology, alongside Karl Marx and Emil Durkheim. We read from his major work, two volumes entitled Economy and Society, published posthumously in 1922 by his wife Marianne. Interestingly, a full translation into English was not available until 1968, which in many ways makes this a reasonably contemporary text. In the episode, we discussed two chapters from The Economy and Society, Chapter 3 on Three Forms of Legitimate Domination and Chapter 11 on Bureaucracy itself. In Chapter 3, he briefly describes the characteristics of bureaucratic organization and the specific position of the bureaucrat under the legal authority with a bureaucratic administrative staff. Here, Weber contrasts a bureaucratic form based on norms with a traditional and charismatic one, and the discussion develops from his general concern with power and authority. The argument goes along the lines of, the most primitive type of authority is charismatic, where a person is followed and listened to because of their personal charisma. Because let's face it, it's really fun to follow such leaders. They get everyone excited about what needs to be done in an almost manic manner. The more sophisticated one is hereditary, where authority is passed down along familial lines, such as the case with nobility or in family-owned businesses, for example. The bureaucratic form, or what Weber terms as the rational legal authority, is the form most appropriate to running a contemporary large-scale organization. All that paper and all those rules serve the purpose to ensure that all are treated equally and based on their suitability for the position of leadership, or followership for that matter. Of course, this is not how it works in practice all the time, but that's another matter, one which we do touch upon during the episode. We also find the famous ideal type in this chapter. Ideal type of bureaucracy, that is. Weber describes it as something characterized by a number of organizational features such as hierarchy, rules, but also behavioral ones such as impersonalism, as well as aspects related to employment such as hiring. He generally describes bureaucracy as a form of authority based on impersonal rules and a universe of standardized, formalized work, and mentions at one point that bureaucracy may frequently be reduced to a system of rules and procedures alone. The second chapter we read, Chapter 11, entitled Bureaucracy, is from Volume 2. Here Weber goes into greater detail and analyzes the individual features of bureaucracy while showing the differences between the modern form of bureaucracy, well, for his day modern, and the historically earlier forms, at length. There are at least two meanings which Weber refers to when speaking about bureaucracy. The notion already existed before Weber, even though he was the one who imported it into social sciences, and it was used with a negative meaning referring to the power that officials had assumed with the emergence of the modern state. We are basically talking about the class of workers that, from their bureaus, regulate how things are run and overview the general government. There is a tricky issue here worth noting, though. When Weber writes, he refers at the same time to his class of officials, and with this he speaks of officialdom, but also to the way in which the work of these employees was structured in modern times and contrasts it with other forms of bureaucracy. For example, a patrimonial one during monarchic times in which, for instance, the notion of office did not exist, or have any meaning for that matter. So Weber is speaking of a bureaucratic or bureaucratized bureaucrats, or more simply, bureaucratic administrative staff. Finally, the notion of bureaucratized work relates to his interest in the organization of work in more rational ways, which basically gives rise to the ideal type of bureaucracy. Rationality and rationalization are central terms, and part of what he describes as the rationalization of the world refers to the advancement of a level of calculability in all social spheres. Or, to paraphrase into English, with greater rationality comes greater certainty. This is the root of his famous idea, later known in his works as the iron cage, in which a system of technical efficiency grows and encompasses all spheres of life. During the episode, we focused on three main themes: what is bureaucracy for, who is bureaucracy for, and rules. Part 1 of the episode is primarily about the what and the who, while in part 2 we go into more detail about rules, which seems appropriate given the key role rules play in the waivers system. So what is bureaucracy for? This may seem like an odd question. What is a hammer for? It is for hammering, a chair is for sitting, a car is for transportation, and a dog is for being cute and funny, as well as for chewing things you never knew you needed but suddenly realized that you do. Oh well. But what is bureaucracy for? Bureaucracy is for making work more rational, right? Okay, but unlike hammers, chairs, and dogs, who are at least semi-sufficient in their being, work is always a work towards some particular goal, making bureaucracy a tool for rationalizing work towards that particular goal. Now, Weber makes no mention of this in his ideal type. He is simply developing a mechanism that, when applied, would ensure the most efficient and reliable way of achieving whatever it is that needs to be achieved. This, of course, can be anything from a really efficient stock trading system to a really efficient way of exterminating groups of people, as was the case during World War II. See Zygmunt Bauman's work on what made the Holocaust possible for more details. Alternatively, Franz Kafka's novel The Trial is an excellent exposition of how bureaucracy can just be spinning its wheels without a particular end or purpose in sight. Kafka is a highly appropriate reference for Weberian bureaucracy because not only was he a keen observer of the social, but he also lived at the same time as Weber, in the same country, and presumably observed the same kinds of organizations that Weber was inspired by. Another aspect of what is bureaucracy for is human motivation. We discussed why people would want to work in a bureaucracy given some of its more obvious limitations, absence of purpose not being the least of those. One reason we came up with was power. Bureaucracy carries with it quite a lot of power, which, even maintaining Weber's insistence on separating the personal from the professional, can still be impressive to bear. The other is job security. Weber wanted lifetime devotion from his ideal bureaucrats, who would work for the organization for the duration of their natural lives, in return for not having to worry about downsizings and other such unpleasantries. Think of classical corporations in the US during the 50s, 60s, and parts of 70s, where it was completely acceptable to turn up for work every day for the duration of your working life in order to receive salary, pension, and a fancy wristwatch in gratitude for your service to the bureaucracy. Transitioning to who is bureaucracy for, we talked about two key things. One, how bureaucracy is less about efficiency and more about reduction of uncertainty, and two, how bureaucratic experience is different for senior managers and line workers and everyone in between, basically subject to how far they are up the bureaucracy. Comparing Weber to Taylor, whom we read for episode 1, for Taylor workers needed to be told what to do and exactly how to do it, because Taylor believed that they were not particularly clever. For Weber, however, this was not the case. In a bureaucracy, information is distributed along the lines of offices, so that each office looks after the information and knowledge appropriate to fulfilling its function. While this means that, yes, higher offices will have a broader view of the organization, it does not mean that higher offices necessarily know best how to do work. This is on the one hand, that is. On the other, Pedro brought up an example of how lower-level employees experience a lot of anxiety as a result of them simply not knowing what to do, or whether to show up for work the next day. The reason they don't have that information is because their office is perceived not to qualify for having it by the bureaucracy in place. This, of course, generates a lot of uncertainty for those on the receiving end. And speaking of uncertainty, a frequently overlooked fact about Weberian bureaucracy is that it is not really concerned with efficiency. Because Weber wrote in German, the translation of his work arrived to the English-speaking world after Taylor had written his Principles of Scientific Management. The reading of Weber as developing a system for greater efficiency is a consequence of this, because Weber was only marginally concerned with efficiency. His main thing was reduction of uncertainty. To illustrate, Ralph gave an example of how nuclear power evolved in the United States as opposed to Britain and France. The bumpy road taken by American companies in pursuit of nuclear energy generation was avoided in Europe because the governments of Britain and France bureaucratized everything to do with nuclear power plants straight away, avoiding uncertainty over technology and safety that had to be navigated by US companies independently. It is these rules and standards that we mainly concerned ourselves with in part 2 of the episode. Some of the main topics were how does understanding of the rules relate to the ability to follow the rules, and what about situations where there are too many rules? In terms of the former, we discussed how Weber does not mention whether an understanding of the rule is important or not. Granted, for him the ability to follow the rule is implicit in a person being qualified to hold the office, but still, this is a bit simplistic. It is perfectly fine if the rule is, take this and bring it from point A to point B when the alarm sounds, for example, but what of more intangible rules, such as smile and be friendly, or a popular one in professional services firms, look respectable? And then there are situations where people may simply not understand a rule or what a rule is for. Ralph gave examples of how deployed military personnel of lower ranks would not understand what their mission was for because it was not a function of their office to hold such knowledge. But if you're asking devotion from bureaucrats, in military or otherwise, they, as humans, would certainly want to know what it is that they're working towards and why. And how about situations where there are simply too many rules? We concluded that for Weber, rules are an absolute good, so it does not seem that there is a space in his system for counterproductive rules. But in practice, rules function in an absolute sense to either safeguard against something really dangerous, or as a form of socialization into the organization. The idea there is that one studies rules in order to understand how the organization works, but once such understanding is achieved, the person is expected to be able to introduce flexibility into the rule following. And that's more or less it. If you haven't listened to the episode yet, I hope that this summary will have enticed you to do so. And if you did listen, I hope that this was a good reminder. My key takeaway from the discussion of bureaucracy was that bureaucracy is about reducing uncertainty and not increasing efficiency. But even this depends on where you are in the organization, of course. I hope you enjoyed this summary. This is still a new segment, so please tell us what you think of it, what you like and what you don't like, or maybe what you would like to have here that we don't. You can get in touch with us via our website, on Twitter, Facebook, and through LinkedIn. Please feel free to distribute this amongst your colleagues and or students who may be interested in catching up or learning about the Weber. Thank you for listening, and I hope to see you next week as we begin our 2-episode examination of the functions of the executive by Chester Barnard, here on Talking About Organizations.